You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 126 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Rollman, coming to you live on this Sunday evening. I usually say fine Sunday evening, but not today for obvious reasons. And Eric Cole joining me this week on the podcast. What's up, man?
What's up, man? Hi, everybody. Where are we talking Braves stuff?
Yeah, you remember the last like 3-4 weeks when people have been accusing us of being super positive? Probably not today after a 4-game sweep at the hands of the Rockies. So let's just start there.
Yeah, my timeline's a lot of I'm dead inside type stuff. So
yeah, it's been a nice roller coaster ride. Before, and we'll talk about the Rockies series here in a second. But before that, the Braves had won 5 in a row. They had won 6 of 7. They were on their way to what looked like it was going to be an awesome homestand. Basically just get one or two of these games against the Rockies and keep the momentum going. And then, of course, they blew two massive leads in the bullpen over the course of a 4-game series. Easily could have won today as well. So a pretty painful set of losses, especially Friday and Saturday, I will say, because of the bullpen. Saturday, especially, 2 outs in the 9th, up 3 runs, is about as bad as it gets. So what was your big takeaway from the weekend, other than just the fact that it couldn't get any worse, pretty much?
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of – it was kind of – if something could go wrong, it did go wrong. Dansby had an error that kind of led to some runs in one of those bullpen meltdowns, and then the other one, you have Minter on the mound. And, most of the time, that's pretty much going to be, if you have a 3-runner lead, it's about as good as our bullpen is going to get. And, to see them to give up the lead and then, then in extras to, give up a couple runs and end up losing that game too. I mean, that stinks. I still feel okay, though, if I'm just being honest. I mean, the Rockies team's pretty good. And before that, the Braves had played against some pretty good teams really well. And it's overall, obviously it doesn't feel great, but at the same time, I'd feel a little worse if I thought the Phillies were playing any well. And they're struggling with them. They're having their hands full with the Mets of all teams. So, does it feel great? No. But at the same time, there are positives to take away. I mean, Folty was really good in his start, and, me and Ronald Acuna is still hitting down his mind. And I know we'll talk about that a little bit later. And we have some players playing well. So, obviously, getting swept in a 4-game series is not what you want to have happen, especially at home. But at the same time, I'm not too low about it, because ultimately, the Rockies are a pretty good team. And I'm pretty sure they have the best record in Major League Baseball since June. So, that, again, doesn't feel great. But at the same time, it's not something I'm super low about. It's more, it kind of stinks, because if they had, won those 2 games, instead of, being in a virtual tie with Philly right now, we'd, have a couple games up on them, and, we'd be, heading into the stretch run in much better shape.
Yeah, the Rockies are having one of those seasons where everything goes right. Like, they have a pretty bad run differential, and yet they just continue to win all these weird games. They won at least 2 of the ones over the weekend in weird fashion. They're playing very, very well. You mentioned the Phillies. We should say we're recording this about 8:30 on Sunday night. At the moment, the Phillies are down 6-0 to the Mets. So if the Phillies lose that game, the Braves will be in first place, despite all of the sort of death over the weekend. So even if Philadelphia comes back and takes like a crazy victory away from the Mets here, the Braves will only be down 0.5 game. So things could be worse with some help there from the Phillies, because they've been pretty bad as well, as you mentioned, against the Mets. So, it could be worse. Obviously, the 4-game sweep doesn't leave anybody with positive feelings, obviously, mostly because of the way it happened. It's almost be better if they had gotten mauled in those 4 games.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like, the 2 games they just, really let get away, and then Sunday again, it was winnable. So it almost feels worse as a result of that, but it's important to keep context, something that I've always kind of tried to do on the pod is keep things a little higher when they're really low and a little bit lower when they're really high. I bet, you know, that kind of makes you an easy target to be called like a hater or all that fun stuff when things are going really well. But, you know, at times when things are not going well, I think you and I are probably going to be a little bit higher just because we just bring things back to the mean a little bit. So it could be worse. You know, the Rockies are a pretty good baseball team and the Braves are still in really good shape. In fact, you know, all the systems still like the Braves make the playoffs. It isn't quite as rosy as it was 4 days ago. But, you know, Philly's not playing well really helps. And the Nationals are basically DOA at this point. So
that's wild to me about how bad they've been.
I mean, they're below 500 on August 19th. That's pretty much inconceivable, frankly, because it's not like they've had – I mean, they've had some issues. But if you told me the Nationals would be under 500 in, you know, mid to late August, I would have said, you know, Scherzer got hurt or Harper got hurt or something. And that really hasn't happened. They've had most of their guys most of the season and they've just been a disaster. It's kind of, you know, you don't want to make too much light of it. It's definitely fun if you're a Braves fan, I'm sure, to poke fun at the Nationals, but it's just kind of wild, honestly, to see how bad they've been, because it's been pretty stunning, which is, you know, all that to say, it helps the Braves because, you know, they still have a wild card chance. If they somehow don't, you know, if they can't hold on and beat the Phillies in the division, the Nats just kind of going away altogether takes the team out of the wild card race, and the Braves have a pretty decent shot of sneaking in anyway. Even if for some reason, you know, Philly gets scalding hot here, there's another out that the Braves might not have had if Washington was playing well.
Yeah, and I feel pretty strongly right now, and I've said this before. I just don't like Philly's offense for a stretch run. Like, it just doesn't feel like they're, obviously their pitching's very good, but like they're gonna have to win like a ton of 3-2 games to go on a really hot streak. And I mean, it's possible that they'll have like, you know, like a 3 or 4 game winning streak where, you know, everyone in that rotation is like pitching really well. But I mean, that offense doesn't scare me at all. So no. I don't know. I just don't see them. I just don't see them sustaining it. I think the Braves will have to really punt this to lose the division at this point, which is a good feeling. But I don't think they'll do that. I mean, obviously this particular series was bad. But you know, there was a lot of things to like, you know, kind of going into it, and it's kind of some fluky things cost them a couple wins. Whereas, you know, it'd be worse if like you felt like the offense wasn't doing anything, or like no one in the rotation was doing anything. You know what I mean? It's just kind of some fluky things happened that didn't go their way. You know, I mean, even like Freddie, like hitting a ball that like probably would have been a home run for him any other day, and it hit off the yellow tape. And the day before, the same thing happened to Acuna. Like, it's just kind of like, okay, sure.
One of those, one of those weekends, even if it was at home and all that fun stuff. So, I mean, we could probably talk about those four losses for an entire podcast, and if this was more of a daily show, we probably would do that. But for now, we'll go back to our more big picture stuff. But yeah, I think you and I, judging by this conversation, are still fairly confident in where the team stands. If they go out and lay an egg this week, it might get uglier. But at the same time, like, you know, a 4-game stretch here doesn't murder you. And that, you know, they go to Pittsburgh now. Pittsburgh is a team that doesn't necessarily scare you to death, but at the same time, they're someone who's that's a team that's capable of beating you up a little bit if you don't take them seriously. Followed by Miami. So, you know, Miami's been a team that everyone's beating up on. At the same time, that can't be just taken for granted. It's on the road. And as bad as the Marlins were early in the week, we'll talk about that right now. You know, they need to take out – it'd be definitely wise for the Braves to go out and take care of business here, win 5 out of 7, something like that this week, because the schedule, it's hit and miss the rest of the way. But it's a – you know, for instance, after that, they have Tampa Bay for 2 and then the Cubs with a 1-game series at the end of August, which is always fun. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. This is a big week all of a sudden.
It definitely is. I mean, I kind of – last time I said, you know, these next 7 games were just going to be, like, really important, and it kind of – they were. It just ended up that the, you know, the Braves went on a hot streak, then the Phillies kind of cooled off a little bit, but the Phillies regained some ground. So, you know, it's kind of, it could have gone a lot better, but at the same time, like the Braves have the schedule to close this thing out. They can still have some hiccups here and there, because again, I just don't have any confidence in the Phillies, but at the same time, like this is still a puntable thing. So kind of cautiously optimistic is where I am.
That's a good place to be, I think. All right, let's talk about the, some of the fireworks this week. We'll start on the more positive side with Tukey. This feels like a long time ago now, because we talked about this last Sunday night. Garav and I talked about Tukey, and we knew he was going to start. Of course, that was the first game. It was Monday afternoon, so it's almost a full week ago now. But he was flat-out nasty in the debut. Was, of course, optioned right back down to Gwinnett. But looks like he's going to be coming back potentially this week for another start. What'd you see from Tukey? I candidly did not see it live and said that on the pod last week that I was not going to be able to see it live. But I went back and watched it. He looked great to me. Of course, it's one start, but there is clearly no doubt about his actual tools, because they are flat out nasty.
Yeah, I mean, fastball was you know, he had a little trouble commanding it at times, but overall it was really good, and he was changing speeds and, you know, working both sides of the plate, throwing strikes. Curveball looked good. I've honestly seen the curveball look better, which is more of a hat tip to how good his curveball can be. RPMs on that was like 2400 to 2600, which is actually right around league average, but, you know, he gets action on it where he can, you know, make it dives out of the zone, and he made some guys look foolish. You know, he didn't have like that 12 strikeout game that he's really capable of, but like he just didn't seem like they had any beat on him whatsoever, and they looked kind of pretty helpless. And, you know, he threw, you know, high 80s pitches, you know, because it was on a hot day, and, you know, came out of the game, and that was that. He did really well. So, I mean, overall, obviously very happy. He's made a lot of strides this year. The changeup was kind of the biggest thing for him, having one that's actually more than just kind of a have one type pitch. He gets outs with it, and, you know, you have to respect all his whole arsenal, because all of his pitches can really do some damage, and he can get really good action on them. So really happy he's hopefully coming back. I think that he's certainly better than some options that have been getting run out there on the regular. And, you know, I think he's earned his spot. He's worked really hard at it, and he's looked really good this year in the minors. And, you know, we're just kind of getting a taste of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reason we've been talking about him as sort of the X-factor guy potentially coming in, because of the stuff plays up. There are the guys who are, you know, who have been ahead of him in the pecking order because they're older or have been up for a longer time in AAA, all that fun stuff. But his stuff kind of just speaks for itself. I'll be interested to see how they handle him. We got a lot of questions this week about how the Braves might handle him moving forward. Of course, we can't know that. But if I ask you what you think about his role moving forward, is, like, you know, if this team's in the playoffs, is he going to be in the rotation? Like, what do you see from him? I know I'll acknowledge that we're definitely guessing a little bit here, but what do you see if this team, you know, is able to make the postseason? Is he going to be in the playoff rotation or in the bullpen, or how do you see that working out?
I maintain that an ideal rotation does not, at this point in time, does not include Julio Teheran in it, and it would include Tukey's also kind of rapidly approaching like a career high in innings and, you know, all that stuff. So I don't think it'd be a crazy notion to have him just in the postseason bullpen on the postseason roster. And I think the most likely option is that he's kind of in the bullpen and, you know, either someone gets hurt or, like, you know, really kind of struggles in the postseason, then maybe he takes a rotation spot. But, you know, as of right now, my guess is in the bullpen.
Maybe the fireman role, something like that, like where he's coming in and just kind of bailing people out.
Yeah, like
multiple,
like,
innings, and, you know.
Yeah, he's Lance McCullers.
Yep.
And that would be that, and people already speculate on him having that role anyway, and that would be he would excel in that, because he can just come in and just give like six innings of relief, and then he keeps you in a game.
Yeah, he's going to be. I mean, I think his stuff would even be nastier in that role. It's kind of hard to think about how crazy that is.
Oh yeah, He can touch 98, 99. So, like,
yeah, I mean, it's going to be filthy. We've kind of been dreaming about that role for three, 4 months now, but it really could happen with the way that he looked there and the way the situation works out with the bullpen. Before people get mad about Julio, I know he's been good the last two starts, numbers wise. You know, he's allowed 3 runs total in 13 innings the last two starts. I thought he did look a little bit better this week in the loss to Colorado, but I thought he actually looked pretty decent by his standards, other than a couple of shaky times. But I'm kind of with you. Like, until we see a larger sample of him being solid again, I won't believe it. And even, you know, even now, like, it's just his stuff. It's more of a stuff concern. So I tend to lean with you there. I'm not sure the Braves feel the same way. I've always thought they're going to default to Julio because he has the experience and he's been around forever.
I don't think it's the most likely outcome that he's not in the playoff rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd have to pitch himself out of it. I mean, you could argue against this point being correct, but I think, you know, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt longer than anybody else would. And that's, I guess, justified in some ways. He's been good for a long time, so we'll see. But especially if he's going to pitch, the way he has the last two games, at least results wise, he's not going to go anywhere. I think you would probably need a 3 or 4 start sample of him kind of blowing up for them to pull him out of the rotation. And he just put, I guess, like, put 2 in the bank of solid starts, which kind of hurts that case a little bit.
I won't be like super outraged by it, because there's arguments for it. There's arguments to have him in the playoff rotation, but, like, you know, it's just in kind of my ideal world. I just feel like that the playoff rotation would probably be better served with going with some other guys. But at the same time, who knows? Like, Julio is perfectly capable of where, like, you can't hit him. It's just not nearly as often as I would like.
Yeah, so. he's looked better, so we should at least acknowledge that. But I'm kind of with you in general. Okay, let's talk about the really the headliner of the week, other than, I guess, before the four-game collapse, was certainly the Ronald Acuña madness midweek, the Jose Urena show when he was plunked with the first pitch after his home run streak came together. I know we're talking about this with the benefit of a few days of hindsight here, but what was your first reaction when that was, were you among the crowd that was like out for blood? I think most Braves fans were ready to fight anyone in their path that evening. Of course, Ronald is now okay. He actually ended up playing the next day, which was pretty shocking to me, at least that they wouldn't at least give him a day, but he looks fine, which is nice. But, you know, we'll talk about every layer of this, but what was your first reaction when that all kind of went down there?
I was very upset. Only a cursory look at my timeline, you could see that.
Yeah, I knew that, but I figured I'd ask the question anyway.
It was so clearly intentional, is my thing. Like, he was aiming square for Ronald with the hardest thing he's ever thrown as a first pitch and one of his fastest pitches he's thrown this year, and aimed square for him only because Ronald Acuña has been torching them and really everybody. And Jose Urena has a history, right? Like, he has a history of, like, he started brawls in the minor leagues. He's hit star players before. He feels like it's like this, his role is like, you know, like, well, I'll teach this guy a lesson. I'll hit him. And then that way they won't, you know, they'll know who's boss or whatever. And it really drives me crazy because it's kind of one of those, even if that, like, because some people were speculating that, you know, because Ronald, like, gave a small bat flip that was, like, retaliation for that or something on a previous home run. Like, even if that was the reason that, you know, like, well, they didn't like him, you know, showing any emotion after hitting a home run or whatever, these unwritten rules in baseball, this nonsense, one is going to end up costing people, like, serious amounts of playing time, could cost them seasons, could threaten their careers. Because, I mean, like, you know, we've seen guys get hit in the head or getting hit in the hand and miss extended time because they haven't had surgery and stuff. And it just because they don't like someone showing them up. And that drives me crazy. Like, at the end of the day, if you feel that strongly about it, you need to figure out how to get the guy out. You need to figure out how to not give them a chance to show you up. Not to take matters in your own hands and throw 90, 95 plus miles an hour at a guy. Because the batter doesn't have the ability to do that to you. You know what I mean? Yeah, the opposing pitcher can retaliate for that. But is that really what we want to be as a baseball, like, as baseball fans and as, like, a sport, is that, well, how we're going to solve this is just we're going to chuck pitches at each other because the other guy, you know, was excited that he did something awesome. And that, the whole thing made me really, just really made me upset. And the suspension was a joke. And I don't think that it was handled particularly well by the Marlins or by Major League Baseball. I'm still pretty irritated about it, but I'm much happier that, you know, Acuña is fine.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where it's frustrating because I am very confident that if Acuña had been injured, the suspension would have been longer, and that's silly to me. I think that's just a bad way of thinking about it. I sort of see both sides on a suspension. It's clearly a little bit light, but the people that wanted to suspend it for like 50 games, like, that was never going to happen. And, you know, arguments on both sides there. I know he basically only misses one start, and that makes it kind of brutal. At the same time, you know, people have to remember that, you know, he does get docked the same pay. He gets six games docked, so it's not like that. I know it was too light. I would have probably gone somewhere in the, I don't know, 15, 20 game range.
I was on 20, but yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. The people that were rational about it kind of understood that. I understand wanting to send a message and all that stuff, and I agree. It's something that you just can't excuse. Like, especially you factor in the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, he threw the hardest pitch of the season, all that fun stuff. Like, it's clearly intentional. It was not great at all for Major League Baseball. The takes before, during, and after were all bad. Well, not all bad, but mostly bad.
There are some personal favorites. The Keith Hernandez thing was hilarious to me.
Yeah.
That anyone would listen to that man about anything resulting baseball. I understand he was a good player at one point in time, but Keith has his own demons, and acting like he's going to be some sort of arbiter of how baseball should be played is kind of crazy to me.
I mean, he got absolutely killed on the internet, which was rightful. I mean, I'm sure you found a few people that were on his side. I know I did.
There was a couple Mets fans.
For the most part, he got decried nationally, so I was not very surprised by that. But yeah, the takes were certainly out in rare form on all sides. So I kind of enjoyed the take fire. That was not an opinion that I agree with, obviously, but just you kind of just knew. Like, I was sitting back, kind of trying to be calm about it. Like, all right, who's gonna be the first one to defend Jose Urena? And it was, oh, Keith Hernandez, there it is.
So I want to say something nice about Snitker. in all this?
Yeah, let's do that now because I love that too. Let's talk about that.
First of all, if anyone was mad, if anyone out there was madder about that whole situation than Brian Snicker, I will be surprised because the immediately aftermath, he was out for blood.
Yeah, my man blew up, and I mean, everybody enjoyed, even people that don't like him very much as a manager, really were starting to have his back, and it was easy to see why. He was livid from moment one and really, you know, proved his point, I will say, which is something you want to see. I mean, all the stuff about him being a good clubhouse manager and having his players' backs, you kind of saw it all happen in one degree there.
I mean, for sure. And the after the game, the interview that he gave,
it was perfect.
I had no doubt. You kind of knew intuitively, like, look, these players really love him. We personally have our issues with his tactical decisions, but it's kind of hard to deny that, like, to a man, everyone in that clubhouse seems to really like him, right?
Oh, yeah.
But after in that post game interview, I was ready to run through a wall for him because
yep.
he was like, that's my kid, you know, and it wasn't just manager speak. It wasn't just like speaking in the moment in terms of competition and things like that. Like he clearly was personally upset and was like, it was his personal mission on that night to make sure that one, it never happened again. And two, everyone who could be within earshot of him understood his displeasure. And I was like, okay. Yeah, I get it. Now, is that a measurable thing? No, but at the same time, it's a real thing for sure. And you know, I was, you know, sometimes we criticize, you know, Freddy Gonzalez when things would happen. He was just kind of, you know, would just kind of stand around and, you know, kind of like be this emotionless thing. And you know, in Snicker, has been criticized for, you know, maybe his tactical decisions, but there's a reason why. There are definitive positives to him being at the helm, and that was one of them. And I was heartened to see it, and it made me happy that in that situation he was there, because it ended up getting Mourinho thrown out of the game. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, I mean, Snit losing his mind certainly helped in that way, because I mean, people I think have already forgotten that originally Mourinho had not been tossed. It took a while for that to happen. So, you know,
it also took a while to get Snit off the field.
Yeah, I said the same thing. I mean, it's impossible not to like Brian Snicker after that. We were all Ryan Snicker in that moment at that point in time. I think some of the takes went a little bit far. Like there were a few that were out there that were basically like, you know, that's the reason he has to be the manager and that's the reason this team is good and that kind of stuff. I'm like, all right, let's slow down on all that. But at the same time, he did what you would want him to do in that spot. And
yep.
Again, I mean, I know you and I have said this like ad nauseum. The stuff behind the scenes does matter. The clubhouse stuff does matter. Absolutely. The relational stuff does matter. And that's another instance of that that's more public facing than normal, because normally that stuff is not seen. Like, you know, we all kind of knew the players like him. You know, Freddie Freeman's been very, very vocal, and he's the team leader, all that fun stuff. Markakis, the same thing. But that's the rare spot where you can actually see a manager, I guess, quote, earning that in public. It's probably the wrong way to put that, but it's like a very easy way to see why everyone loves Brian Snicker. So that was fun, and he definitely, deserved all of the positivity that was around him that day, because he did the thing that you always want to see your manager do in that spot. And then I totally agree. The post game interview was almost better. I mean, him losing his mind was justified, but the way he handled it post game, you know, with 3 hours of hindsight, he even said, you know, I've had 3.5 hours to I've had 3.5 hours to calm down, and I haven't calmed down yet, something like that. So he was definitely livid, and we could all see why.
And I was happy the Braves didn't retaliate, because a couple of players hinted on this, like, we're in the middle of a playoff chase, and you know that guy was acting.
This team sucks, and we should go win the game. They did. That's what happened.
Yep. And if they retaliate, you know what would happen is that the starter that retaliated would get as long of a suspension, if not longer, than the guy who went headhunting, you know.
Yeah, and they can't afford that, and they all said the right things. I mean, players and Snicker, everybody kind of said, like, they were asked about it after the game, and everyone was in line, like, you know, we're not going to do that, because why would you? And that's a great point. I mean, I'm anti-retaliation anyway. I think it's stupid to throw baseballs at people in 2018. It could be that's not the right way to handle things, but especially, even if you are pro-retaliation, I think you can definitely see right now and that it's a bad idea in the middle of a pennant race against a team that's not a pennant race. Like, you have a lot more to lose than they do.
Agreed. Now, that said, early season Marlins series next year, I feel very confident that he's going to get that that Urania is going to get one in the ribs. He's going to get one in the ribs.
I mean, I'm against that. I will be on record in saying that, but it would not be
for sure.
It would not be a big surprise if that happened. Let's just say.
I agree, but I'm not going to be surprised if that happens. I don't think they're going to forget this one.
No, definitely not. Let's talk about Acuña being out of his mind. Aside from that, obviously, that was the biggest story. But since he came back from injury, he has at least coming into today where he didn't have a great game, but a 1,047 OPS in 42 games since coming back from injury coming into today.
Is that good?
He's been outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, the home run streak was really fun, especially when he led off three straight games with home runs.
I mean, every day. I mean, the third one, I was like, are we kidding me right now? Like, we're doing this again?
Yeah, he's ridiculous. I've been saying he's been ridiculous for years now, and you know he goes on these stretches. I mean, he'll always be a productive player because he just has so many tools. Even if like he's not launching home runs at a prodigious rate, like he'll get his singles and then he'll make things happen with his legs, and I always feel like he'll be a productive player. But when he goes on
the game, he came back after the injury, he singled to open the game and stole second base immediately and scored. It was like, oh, there's another thing he can do.
he's just perfect. He'll have like these 1-for-3 games with 2 walks out of the playoffs, the leadoff spot, and people are actually disappointed with that, and I'm just like, you have weird expectations. So for a guy who just reached base 3 times out of the leadoff spot, and then he'll have those games where he like goes 3-for-3, 2 singles, a double, and drives in a couple runs, gets a walk, steals a base, and you're just like, there's nothing on the field that this kid can't do. Will he do it every time? No. And there's certainly gonna be at bats where it's gonna be frustrating because he'll see a sequence or a pitch, or he'll get fooled and you're like, God, why is he striking out on that? But he's getting better and better every time he gets on the field. And considering the fact that the number of players that are in the same tier of Sim over the last month or so is a very short list. That's obviously a very good place to be. And he's incredibly fun to watch. We could rant about him for hours, but I mean, like, being able to take that pitch, all that attention that was on him through that whole debacle, and he was still, he came right back and was producing right away. There's a lot to like about him, and he's going to be good for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, coming into today, of players with more than 300 plate appearances, he's not quite qualified for the batting title because of the fact that he had that injury stretch. But 300 or more plate appearances this year, he came into the day tied for fifth with Freddie Freeman in WRC+ in the National League. He's 20 years old. It's pretty outrageous. Juan Soto, by the way, is up there too. Juan Soto has been incredible too. There's been this like weird back and forth between Juan Soto fans and Ronald Acuña fans, and I'm just over in the corner like, Juan Soto is awesome and so is Ronald Acuña, so it's just
as long as the Rookie of the Year is one of those two guys,
it will be, so no big deal.
Now you say that Harrison Bader, because of defensive stuff, I'm not saying that I agree with it at all,
it's not happening.
That there's gonna be some mad folks where he gets some top two votes or something just because of
I could see that happening. I can see somebody will vote him up there, but unless something gets very weird, Acuña and Soto are finishing 1 and 2 in the Rookie of the Year, which is fine. And I don't really care about that much. It's one of the things. It's just an example. Like, he entered the day with the same WRC+ as Freddie Freeman, and Freddie Freeman is an MVP candidate this year.
Oh, absolutely. So,
that tells you everything you need to know about the way that Ronnie is playing. And by the way, we should talk about Freddie real fast because I didn't plan to do this. I'm looking at the numbers now. He entered today in a tie with Nolan Arenado, who we just, of course, saw for 4 games, for the NL lead in Fangraphs WAR at 5. And Freddie had 2 hits, including a double today. So actually went up a little bit. I think he, for me, at this very moment, might be the MVP in the National League. I think, 2 months ago or so, we talked about this on the pod and basically said, I said, he's the MVP of the league at this moment. And then he slowed down a little bit, and people, Matt Carpenter got scalding hot. Nolan Arenado, same sort of thing. There was a little bit of a Javi Baez renaissance there for a minute. I think Freddie, for me, is number one. It's very, very close. But the fact that you have a Rookie of the Year candidate, you have a MVP candidate, and for better or worse, Brian Snicker might win Manager of the Year. There's a lot going on here with this Braves team and the awards stuff. I don't really care about very much, but it's still fun to kind of monitor.
And I'm fairly confident that Nick Markakis is going to get some MVP votes. I'm not saying it's going to be anything like particularly high, but he's going to get some.
That actually might hurt Freddie weirdly. I think that'd be very stupid in my opinion. But at the same time, I think you might have some people that vote for Markakis and not Freeman, or kind of knock them both down because they have each other, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate for Freddie, because I think MVP in baseball is very, I don't know, it's kind of, it's always been difficult to kind of discern because it's a very individual sport. But at the same time, you always had that kind of narrative where Markakis has had some nice moments, of course, and he's been really, really good all season long, and you might have some split stuff there, which is unfortunate because Freddie, you know, for all of Markakis' brilliance this year, Freddie's still been better at everything. So, like, it's just kind of been quieter, though. Like, I think without Markakis, and this is obviously the Braves would be happy to have this for Markakis, but if Markakis was just having, like, a regular season, Freddie would probably get a lot more shine than he's actually gotten. A lot of that extra sort of narrative national stuff has gone to Markakis, which is just fine because he's, again, been incredible, and it's this great story, first-time All-Star, but Freddie's just been Freddie the entire time, top five player in the National League the entire way, basically. So I think you're right, though. Now that you mentioned it, you might have some split stuff that might hurt Freddie there.
And I ultimately comes down to how this last month closes, because if Acuña keeps hitting, I mean, like, he obviously he's not going to keep up what he was doing for like a week there where he like literally he couldn't get him out.
He had like a 2500 OPS or something crazy for a week.
Yeah, it was something. But if he closes well and the Braves win the division, he's going to win the Rookie of the Year. That's what's going to happen.
I agree.
And if for no other reason that there are voters, and the same thing goes for Freddie and the MVP. If the Braves win the division and Freddie is a part of that, like he's like, you know, still hitting, again, doesn't have to go on a crazy hot streak, just has to keep being Freddie.
Like, I think if he leads the league in WAR, which right now he is doing, and the Braves win the division, he's going to win the MVP.
I agree.
I'm pretty confident about that.
And I feel the same way about Acuña.
Yeah. No, I'm with you 100%. Both those guys are in great shape, and you know it's all secondary to the team stuff. But you know, as people that enjoy their work, it's fun to see them recognized because you know I think I'm sure you could have gotten some great Ronald Acuña Rookie of the Year odds like a month ago. Because Juan Soto was going out of his mind, and Ronnie just missed a month and all that fun stuff. And it was Juan Soto all the time. And again, Juan Soto is awesome, and he's younger than Acuña, which is crazy. But yeah, that's
he's really good.
Very good.
Yeah, they're fun to watch.
No argument there. All right, we can move on from that. A couple of sort of you know news and notes kind of things before we get out of here. Brandon McCarthy is going to retire apparently after 2018. He said this week. Not a huge surprise there. He's a little bit on the older side, but the Braves actually had an $8 million club option for him next year, so he's apparently just going to hang it up anyway. You know, he's had a bunch of injury stuff, but there is also some inkling that he could be back not necessarily in the rotation, but probably in the bullpen later in the year. People sort of laugh that off. I think that actually kind of matters, especially because as a long man, you probably aren't going to do much better than him, especially if he's healthy and right. That's a big if. But he actually could help you considerably in September if he's healthy and right and ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. You know, it's kind of I don't know. I always hate when a guy has to retire because I mean he wasn't really right for a good while before he went on the DL.
I mean, he's been hurt off and on forever. Like,
yeah.
I mean, before the season, when we talked about the Braves acquiring him, it was kind of always like, look, when he's healthy, he's usually really good. And when he's not healthy, he's just not healthy. And this year, he hasn't been great by any stretch of the imagination. But like, I think if you were telling me he's healthy, he's better than a lot of your long man options. Like, he's better than Colby Allar right now. He's better than, he's better than like that kind of template guy for sure. Like, if you need to just eat some innings in September or even in the playoffs, you get an injury or somebody just is completely ineffective in a playoff series, you got Brandon McCarthy down there to throw 3-4 innings, that might help you. So, I mean, the future stuff,
He has experience in the bullpen, too.
I wasn't expecting the Braves to keep that club option unless he was just, you know, really good down the stretch. I mean, it is pretty cheap in the grand scheme of things. Like, I thought if he was solid this year, the Braves might consider keeping him because it's a very short-term commitment. It's a pretty cheap option. But now that he doesn't want to pitch anymore, it's all about this year. And he's had a very nice career. He's always been really entertaining on Twitter. People, like, everybody likes Brandon McCarthy for the most part. So one of those things where you kind of wish him the best. And I hope he can get back and at least contribute a little bit because he clearly wants to get back and do a little bit. I mean, nice to send him out on a nice little run here.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, you know, really good guy. When he's right, he's really good. I mean, we've seen good starts out of him, you know what I mean? And, you know, if he comes in and, you know, I'm not sure how much his stuff at this point in his career plays up in a bullpen role.
But
at the same time, he's a smart pitcher, and maybe he can, you know, sustain what stuff he does have through a relief appearance better rather than you having to go multiple times through an order. So, I mean, I certainly don't hate the idea of him in the bullpen. And, like, it seems pretty clear from, like, every bit of reporting he's not coming back into the rotation. I mean, something pretty wild
would happen. Yeah, it would have to be a couple more injuries. And we obviously don't want to see that happen. So, yeah, I mean, McCarthy threw, he's already thrown more than 1,200 innings in his career, more than 16 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. Like, a really nice career for him. He's pitched in the big leagues for a long time. You know, a career 4.2 ERA isn't, like, anything crazy to look at, but, you know, he's been a solid major league starter for more than a decade, and that's a nice career. So, shouts to him. Hopefully, you know, if nothing else, get back in September, contribute a little bit, and then we'll make some decisions on the postseason roster if that comes to that. I still think at this point in time, you and I, at least I am, I guess I'll ask you now, playoffs, yes or no at this point? I'm going to say yes, only because I think they're going to win the division, but even beyond that, if they don't win the division, they can bake in a little bit of wild card juice as well, so I will lean, I'll still lean yes, which means we can still talk about this as a positive hypothetical.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, and it's, I don't know, it's, thinking about the bullpen kind of for this postseason is going to be interesting because you have Tukey as an option.
Well, let's talk about that now because people keep asking me about that. That's actually a question we got. I'm looking for it now. Where is it? Oh, Ryan Hutchins asked that question this week about if, what the bullpen should, like, I guess, should look like if everybody's healthy and available in the postseason. And there's a few locks, but everybody else is kind of fluid, man, and it's kind of hard to figure that out, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the names that we are kind of grown accustomed to, I'm pretty sure this guy. Yeah. Vizcaino, I think Vizcaino is going to be back in there, obviously. Sam Freeman, yay.
If Vizcaino is healthy, he's a lock. Minter is a lock. Winkler is a lock if he's healthy. Yeah. That's.
I'm pretty sure they'll have Shane Carl in there, but.
The thing is, there's some guy. I mean, I know you mentioned Sam Freeman. Like, I'm not sure I would give, like, full blown lock status to anybody else that we haven't mentioned. Like, I really think there are guys who I think will be there. Like Sam Freeman, if he's healthy, Jesse Biddle, if he's healthy. Those guys, I think, are going to be there. At the same time, I would not tell you I have 100% confidence in anybody being there outside of healthy Mentor, healthy Vizcaino, healthy Winkler.
I guess that's fair. The next month is basically going to be a tryout.
Well, and you have all these young guys. Like, I'm not saying they're going to suddenly have a bunch of 22-year-olds in the bullpen in the playoffs, but because you have all these available arms, like, what, like, is there a case against Max Fried being in the bullpen in the playoffs? I think I would have him in the bullpen in the playoffs.
Like, Max Fried's filthy. And I'm actually going to go one step further. I'm going to go deep on this prediction. Okay, I do not think it would be crazy that in the near future, Bryce Wilson gets added to the 40-man roster and that he ends up making it.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have all these available guys who it would not be. Again, they're not going to roll out four or five of these guys together. But would it surprise you if there were two or three of these under 23 guys in the bullpen? It wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, they have the best arms, especially if they're going to play up in the bullpen. Like, that's pretty terrifying. Can you imagine? I mean, we already talked about Tukey in the bullpen. Can you imagine some of these guys in the bullpen? Like, they're going to be better than Shane Carl, and they're going to be better than, I mean,
on paper, yes.
Luke Jackson. Like, you know, they're better than those guys.
Well, yes. I mean, I don't disagree with that. Now, at the same time, like, well, sometimes Luke Jackson, like, you know, he'll make these pitches. Like, why didn't you do that two pitches ago?
Oh, yeah, he had a great one over the weekend. When I couldn't believe he was in the game. I was like, really, Luke Jackson here? And then he had this filthy strikeout of Arenado. I was like, okay, that's why he's in the game, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, he had to work a 3-2 count, and you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, he looked really bad, and he threw this disgusting put-away pitch. But, yeah, no, you know my point. It's like, it's a situation where you have to tell me, you know, it's flags fly forever. Like, if you get in the playoffs, especially if you're in a non-wild card game situation, like, you got to have some guys there that are kind of scary in the bullpen. Like, I don't want to see Sam Freeman in the bullpen if I have to help it in the playoffs. Like, it might be there, but, like, I'm trying to think of, like, the most boring name possible. Peter Moylan. Like, name a guy that you don't want to see in the playoffs that might be there. And, like, I mean, Moylan,
give me a young guy. Yeah. Yeah, well, there's experience is a real thing, and I'm not saying that means that Moylan should be a lock. It does mean, though, that even though we really like Tukey, we really like, you know, I really like Bryce Wilson, you know, I still have faith in Colby Allard, and I still, you know, like, but he just may need
that's
more
a guy,
time.
That's a guy who will not be in the playoff bullpen.
Oh, no, 100% no. He won't be.
And we'll talk about him in a second. We'll come back to him, but keep going.
Yeah, but no, he will not be. But, I mean, I would be shocked if he was, let me put it that way. But, you know, it's, you know, Bryce, Tukey, Fried, all these guys. But, you know, having your bullpen full of guys who have, like, 15 innings of service time.
That's what I'm saying. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, so it's tricky. Now, at the same time, I'm with you in that, you know, there's not upside with some players in that bullpen. The best case scenario
for Peter Moylan and Sam Freeman is that the runners that they do let on don't score.
I left a guy off. I just realized that. I left off Brad Brock, who's a lock to be there. Brad Brock's healthy, he'll be there. Sorry, my apologies.
And he's largely been pretty good. I mean, the last couple of appearances have been a little rocky, but, you know, for the most part, he's been as advertised. He gets a bunch of gravel.
Here's a hypothetical for you. Like, I would much rather see Chad Sabatka than Peter Moylan on a postseason roster. Like, just stuff-wise. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know. It's tough for me to, like,
having a guy who can having it, like, especially if, like, you're in a spot in the lineup where, like, you don't have guys who can, like, sit on a fastball. Like, a guy who can throw 98 to 100, that's the thing.
That's what I mean when I say, like, there are guys who I expect to be there if they are alive and relatively effective in September. And I think, you know, a few of those guys we talked about are on that list. You know, Johnny Venters is on that list. Like, if he's effective and healthy, he's going to be on the roster. I'm pretty sure about that. But, you know, your Jesse Biddles, your Sam Freemans, your Luke Jacksons, your Peter Moylans, those guys, you know, if they're okay down the stretch, then sure, they'll be there. But if not, there are some of the – my overarching point is that there are some of these younger arms that won't have room in the rotation that might have already been up at some point in time, and you might stick one or two of those guys in the bullpen as X-factors. And that's kind of the way you look around baseball. Like, you mentioned Lance McCullers earlier. He wasn't in Houston's playoff rotation. That guy was like a legit big-time prospect that had been in the rotation all year long. They had no room for him. It's like, what are you going to do with him? Put him in the bullpen. You know, like, that's the kind of guy who – like, Tukey could be that. You know, Allward's not going to be that. But Tukey or even Max Fried. I'll come back to Max Fried, which is my original point. I think Max Fried's, like, relatively terrifying in the bullpen. Like, he might be really, really nasty in a small setting like that when he's just kind of, like, letting it fly. His stuff is really good, and he's left-handed. Like, that's an X factor.
And he doesn't have to worry about the, like if he has blister issues, that doesn't play up.
That's mitigated.
It's not
really,
that's not as big a deal because it's not repeated as much and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm with you. It's going to be fascinating to see how they hopefully we get to have that conversation. Let me put it that way. Because
the overarching thing for me, aside from just keeping an eye on the young guys, is that you have the locks. I guess we'll just say them again here. Minter, Vizcaino, if he's healthy, Brad Brock, Dan Winkler. And then I would think Venters is a lock if he's healthy. That's a big if he's the health is a thing with Johnny, but, everybody loves him, and he's been good. So
he's been really good, yeah.
Those guys I think are pretty much locks, and everybody else, we'll see what happens there. Let's move on to one or two more things. Oh, we mentioned Colby Auer. Let's come back there. We got a question from at @ctrim49 on Twitter this week, and he basically says, what are the pros and cons of bringing up Colby Auer this year, given the results? Now that he's been up, has not looked great, obviously, but there's been a – I guess my big picture question for you is kind of like, what do you make of all this? Because – A, you're a prospect guy. You've been following him for a long time. B, he's really young. And C, his stuff does just not look very good. So, like, what do you make of this? Are you just, like, I think there's, like, a movement now. It's, like, kind of, like, write him off entirely, which I'm not ready to do. But where are you at with Colby Allard at the moment?
I mean, I have seen Colby pitch a lot, and including this year at AAA. And the results in the majors in terms of what his stuff looked like has not matched up very well with what I've seen out of him in Gwinnett. And it's mostly the secondaries, which is, I mean, the fastball we've kind of known was like the velocity has backed off, but he has legitimately a really good changeup and a really good breaking ball when he's right. But those haven't looked very good. And when that happens, if you have a low 90s fastball and, you know, basically, you know, only serviceable secondaries, that's never going to end well for you as a pitcher. But at the same time, you know, I think that means that he's just not ready. And, you know, he needs to, you know, take this year. I think he just needs to finish the year in AAA now and kind of get into the offseason, maybe get some strength, work on getting some more bite on his breaking ball, because he needs something like that that can dive out of the zone to kind of keep guys off balance so they're just not sitting on something that's going to be in the zone, because he gets hit hard when he does that, when that happens. So long term, I mean, is his ceiling maybe a fourth or a fifth starter? Maybe. I don't know necessarily I'm particularly bullish on him being a number three anymore, but
unless he somehow finds his high school pre-back injury velocity, it's tough to see much more than a supporting starter.
Yeah, but like a number. We'll I mean, now is that a terrible outcome for a prospect? Not really. No, I mean we see guys who literally are like top 10 prospects and they can't stick in the majors because they're that bad.
Which might happen to Colby Allard. Like that's a reasonable scenario, but also it's. way too early to write off a guy who's 21 years. He just turned 21 this week. Like,
yeah, I mean,
people I think, already like, all right, scratch him off the
getting
list.
To triple,
like, wait, what?
Yeah, getting to AAA that young is no easy task. He has pitched very well to get there. He's just not ready for the majors yet, and that's okay. That's
he
totally
is not.
You want to know why? Because that entire Gwinnett rotation is really good, and he doesn't have to be. You know what I mean?
He doesn't have to be.
He can go back and he can be what he's going to end up going to be. You know, and that means
I think it's tougher for him too because he's now being compared to Tukey and he's being compared to Kyle Wright and guys like just have way better arms than he does. And he's not a guy who, as we briefly mentioned before, like he is not the profile of the guy who you're going to throw in the bullpen and have his stuff play up. Like he doesn't have that. That's not what he's ever going to be. So, like on a playoff team this year, any more innings allotted to Colby Allard is a mistake, frankly. Like, he's not going to be better than the other options. Like, there was a debate this week about who's better right now, Sam Freeman or Colby Allard, and it's like, Sam Freeman's better, not close. Like, for a bullpen role, like, Sam Freeman's a better pitcher than Colby Allard at this moment. Like, and that's all that to say, like, nobody's in love with Sam Freeman, but if you're telling me I have to get an out right now in the major leagues in the seventh inning, I'm going to take Sam Freeman 10 out of 10 against Colby Allard. It's not a shot at Colby Allard. He just turned 21 years old and he's been really bad in the majors. That's kind of all that is. And again, like, it's just tough. Like, if this is a situation, this is 2 years ago and the Braves were like, you know, 20 games out, sure. Like, give me some more Colby Allard starts. But right now,
yeah, give him some reps up there. But
yeah, they can't afford it.
Now he just needs to be in Gwinnett. And you know, work things out. Maybe, I mean, the guy might just end up just being gassed. You know, that's something that happens. And if that's the case, then you know, give him an off season. He'll come back, and if he's pitching really well, then you know, try again and see how things look then. I mean, because right now the Colby that I've been seeing is not the same Colby that like is enough to make you think he can stick in the majors as a starter.
And
he's not going to be
important.
Frontline starter is not going to happen with him. But you know, I still think that there's a chance for him to be in a major league rotation, and that if that means he needs to wait a little while and get ready, that's fine.
And I'm glad you said that because I think I'm guilty of this too. I've not seen him near as much as you have, so that's why I wanted to kind of default to you on that because I think, you know, rightfully so. If you're a Braves fan that hasn't watched minor league baseball and you just saw Colby Allard, he did not look good at any point in those outings. So you might just be like, "Who is this guy? Get him off my television screen." But you've seen him a lot, and I think I trust your opinion when it's like, this is not the same guy that we saw even in Gwinnett, you know, a month ago. So just file that away for the future. I think we'll talk more about Colby. I'd be surprised if we spend much more time on him until November or December. But at some point, we'll talk about him again. All right, one more thing before I let you get out of here. Got a question from Chris Klein on Twitter this week, and he says, going into the final two series with the Phillies, where do the Braves need to be in the standings to feel comfortable about having a good chance to win the division? And I'll add this, seven out of the last 10 games of the season are against Philly, which I hadn't really fully comprehended until this week.
No, I hadn't. I hadn't until you just said it.
There are four at home. Then they go on the road first. The last six games of the year, which includes the last weekend of the season, is three on the road in Philadelphia. So yeah, seven of the last 10, four at home, three on the road. That's very, very interesting. I think it's obviously going to come down to head-to-head matchups. But I mean, the question is, how comfortable would you need to be? The Braves have to be three or four up for me to be any level of comfortable, I will say. And even then, I've just seen too much. I have too much Atlanta drama, disaster in my head. They'd have to be really, really far ahead for me to actually be comfortable. You know, coming. I mean, we have seven of the last 10. You can go, if you go 1-6, like it's a situation that could happen. It's baseball, man. Like, it's a small sample kind of thing. Comfort level doesn't really exist. I can't imagine a scenario, honestly, between now and then. You're talking about a month. I mean, maybe Philly just dies, but I think it's going to be uncomfortable there regardless, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be a three-game lead, I think, for me.
At least.
Yeah, three-game, and I would feel good.
But three-game, you got to go 2-5 or better? I don't know.
And that's with me knowing that means I can have my heart broken, right? Like,
sure.
Now, things to note, though, the Braves have played the Phillies very well this year. Obviously, they haven't played them in a while, but, you know, the Braves have played against that team pretty well. And
that I forgot to say. A series is going to be at the Mets for three. And that's obviously a favorable matchup, but it's on the road and it's the Mets. They'll be trying to beat the Braves. They don't like the Braves. So
no, they'll certainly be trying. But at the same time, you know, what they're working with up there at this point is kind of, I don't know. I'm obviously that this is going to get played back at some point by somebody if, like, you know, the Braves get swept by the Mets or something. But
which could happen. That's baseball. No, it's three games. You know what I mean?
No,
like, we all know that.
It is hard to be comfortable in this. It's just not going to be a comfortable thing, this division race, just because, one, these are both teams that are good teams, and, you know, that they're like a bitter rival too. And if one thing goes wrong, it feels like a lot of things could go wrong.
I think I have my answer. I think for me to actually be comfortable, they'd have to be six up with 10 to go, maybe seven. And I know that's probably irrational because of, again, I'm an Atlanta sports fan. But for me to actually be like, all right, here we go, playoff time, it had to be at least six, I think. And that's insane. It should be smaller than that with all rational behavior because, you know, Philly's got to play somebody else too. In fact, I'm looking that up right now to see who Philly has to play in between because that matters as well. But, yeah, I mean, nothing is comfortable about that. It's just baseball is the least comfortable sport too. Like for me, if I put my fan hat on, nothing about baseball games that matter a ton at the end of a season are going to ever be comfortable.
Nope.
Oh, by the way, this is not great. Philly, I guess it probably is great, actually. Philly has to go to Colorado for four in between.
Yeah, that's not a fun place to play.
That's probably not where they want to go. And that is another
team that's going to be in a division right down
to the
wire.
Yeah, they'll be trying. That place will be rocky in Denver. I'm actually, that makes me a little bit more optimistic. Maybe I drop it to five now instead of six because they got to go to Colorado for four. But, you know, the overarching point remains comfort is out the window in late September. I'll say that.
Yep. It's not about comfort. And more importantly, I'm just happy that, like, at the end of September, I find it hard to believe that I'm not going to be caring about the outcome of baseball, of Rays baseball games.
I mean, like, yeah. it would take a complete meltdown in the next month to not be caring about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be caring about. I mean, again, it would require a total disaster, but we're going to be caring about Braves baseball games. You know, whether that be the wild card race, whether it be the division, like this team's in the playoff hunt. Like they're fighting for a playoff spot. It's no longer a will they be fighting for a playoff spot. They're playing really well right now. Right now, it's, you know, we're heading towards the end of August. They're in the lead for the division. I mean, assuming that, you know, again, the Mets don't find a way to mess that up, but and
by the way, it's now 7-0 in the sixth, so I feel pretty
good. Yeah, so you know, hopefully, you know, nothing crazy happens. But I mean, the Braves are in the lead for the division against a team that's and the Phillies are struggling right now against some bad competition, and the month of September, we're going to be looking at. It's not going to be like, well, let's see who's going to be coming up in September call ups and who would be interesting to watch. We're talking about impactful moves that could, you know, direct the course of a playoff run for this team, and that makes me really happy.
Yeah, no question about that. All right, one fun question before we get out of here, and it comes from Barry Kuntz on Twitter. He asks, would you like to see the Braves do a Hard Knocks type of show for spring training? So as someone who covers the NBA, it's been a popular topic this week because there was a big thing like, why doesn't the NBA do Hard Knocks? And my response is, because it wouldn't be fun. Roster spots are not really up for grabs like that. Like football, it's perfect because you have a 53-man roster. You have all these roster, like legitimate roster battles and, like, you know, great stories of guys off the practice squad, all that stuff. In the NBA, you might have one roster battle, maybe. Like that doesn't really fit the same kind of model. Baseball's interesting. I think there's usually more spring training battles for roster spots than there are in basketball, at least. Like I think about Braves in the recent years. There's always one or two legit, like, nice stories to follow that might work there. So I'm inclined to say yes, but where are you at on this? Because I think it's interesting to at least ponder. I'm not sure the Braves would even do it. And I think that anyway, but it's a weird kind of thing, like theory thing.
I think that a majority of the players and the coaches involved, it'd be kind of boring because I mean, we're kind of the guys that kind of take this kind of thing. Now watching Ozzy, obviously I'd watch it, but I mean, watching Ozzy and Acuna doing their thing, they're Acuna, if you haven't had a chance,
yes,
yeah, but their pregame routines, Acuna was hysterically funny. In the preseason workouts for Gwinnett before he came up, he was really funny. He was dancing, and he would be fun to watch. If there were to be a Hard Knock type show for the Braves, if it did not heavily feature Ron Washington, it would be an opportunity lost.
Agreed, but and I was going to say this later, but now that you mentioned Wash, this has to be an HBO show, or I'm less interested. If this is on basic cable, I don't want any part of it. I need full unedited Ron Washington. I need him to be able to swear.
Yeah, he's been a fascinating person to watch because, like, you know, other than I don't think he knows how to throw a stop sign at third base.
Yeah, he's bad at his job, I think, but he's really entertaining. Everybody loves him. Like, I know you and I both know people that cover the team all the time that are around. Everyone seems to be enthralled by Ron Washington as a personality. I'm glad you mentioned that because him, Ozzy, and Ronald would be enough to watch it. I would love to see that on HBO. I'd be less intrigued if it was a Fox Sports South or an ESPN or an MLB Network production because they just couldn't show you the stuff that I want to see, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Now, one thing about Ron Washington, I'm not sure if he's, you know, good at in terms of like necessarily the base running decisions that he makes at third base. They work out, but at the same time, you're like, whoo, if that throw was
not his strength, I don't think. Which is funny because that's actually theoretically his job.
Well, he also does a lot of infield instruction. And say what you want but infield. I mean, that's a real thing, and the infield defense for the Braves has been legitimately very good. So, and I think he's been a part of that. So I did want to say that, you know, while, you know, I'm not sure if he necessarily should be the one, you know, making the decisions about, you know, when the guy should be rounding third and head for home, because it's sometimes it gets a little hairy. At the same time, you know, he's definitely brought something to the squad, and, you know, to the man, I've heard the same thing you have, is that, you know, everyone loves him. Everyone.
Yeah, all things equal, I know you and I will be watching this regardless. Kind of who there's a certain diehard fan that would absolutely watch this regardless of what packaging it was in, all that fun stuff. I'm not sure it would be as intriguing for a super casual non-Braves fan as a NFL version would be. But I think it would do better than the NBA, which is kind of funny because I think the NBA is like the fast rising national sport right now. I think it's just a bad package for this particular thing. But for baseball, you just need to find one or two training camp battles. That's kind of what carries Hard Knocks. It's usually like a rookie or somebody trying to make the squad. And because you have all these guys in the minor leagues, there's some storylines there that would work, I think.
Well, the Braves would be an interesting case study for this, too, if they made a big offseason acquisition.
Which they then, might
they,
do.
They very well could. That would make things really – I mean, if they, like, sign Manny Machado or something, that all
of a
sudden that shows.
Yeah, I mean, this year it's a lot of Baker Mayfield for the Browns. They're currently doing the Hard Knocks on HBO. And I think, obviously, it wouldn't be – like, you wouldn't have the number one draft pick like you would in the NFL. But, yeah, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, whoever they want to trade for, somebody like that would be very interesting. I will say, if you're trying to look for a downside – I love Freddie Freeman. He's a very not fun person to cover. He just kind of does his job. Same with Markakis. Like, those guys are really good. And I think Freddie's shown some more personality. Like, he was really good on ESPN during the Home Run Derby, I thought, on camera.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's not his usual personality, like, day-to-day, at least on camera and public.
And I think he would hate having a camera.
Yeah, he would not like that. There are guys on this team that would not enjoy. I think baseball, that's the one thing about this that's counterintuitive, is that a lot of, you know, quote-unquote baseball men would not like this. They would not want to be chronicled in that way, I don't think. But, you know, I would vote yes. Sign me up. So
agreed.
Who knows? All right, man. Well, that's probably enough of us for today. We've gone longer than I thought because we always do, you and I.
Yep.
anything you want to get out there? I know you are a man of many talents and many jobs, so please plug anything that you like, my friend.
Sure. I mean, keep following us along. We're in the home stretch for minor league recaps, and I'm kind of coming to grips with that because the minor league seasons are going to be coming to an end soon, so make sure you're reading those up until the minor league seasons end. We're going to be doing the same thing we've always been doing, you know, scouting reports on prospects, you know, updating you guys on what's going on in the farm system. Make sure you read talkingchop.com. And if you want general base, kind of more trade and rumors type stuff and more league-wide focus, you can – I'm also the site manager over at MLB Daily Dish. Make sure you read those articles. I would greatly appreciate it. Nothing specific in the pipeline for me right now other than kind of the usual stuff. But, you know, once the season kind of gets down into the playoffs, I'm sure we're going to have some fun things to talk about. I'm sure we'll have some sort of feature coming up about September call-ups and all that stuff pretty soon.
Yep, it's coming. You know, we're officially into late August as of now because it's the 20th tomorrow. So, yeah, we're here, man. About another six weeks of baseball before we get into the playoffs, and we'll be here. I do think they're, you know, it's tough. It's kind of interesting and weird to talk about all this stuff for the first time on the pod. Like, we're going through a playoff race for the first time. I'm trying to fill myself out and try to figure out what's going on how to cover this stuff as we get here, because I guess we should probably lean into more game stuff. I think this is a nice springboard today because we talked a lot about the four-game disaster. As we get closer, the games matter more and more. You know, I guess they all matter the same in the grand scheme of things, but as you get closer, there's a lot more eyeballs on specific games in September. So it should be fun.
Yep, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it, man. It's nice to be talking about a playoff run.
No question about it. All right, man. Well, thank you so much as always, Eric. We'll do this very, very soon as always. You're always welcome on the pod. Anytime you want to come on, please do. And then there'll be times that I just beg you to come on.
I'm here for you, man.
As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast, Apple Podcasts especially. We're also on SoundCloud where we're hosted, and every single podcast has a dedicated post on the site at talkingchop.com. Check that out as well. We will see you guys next week.